ABC
You are listening
News.
To Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
That's where Bryce Hill lives and works as a realtor.
Huge tornado just ripped through town. Not good. Yeah, right through the middle of town.
Fire chief confirms one person killed. Massachusetts Air National Guardsman Jack Texera, now indicted on 6 counts of willfully retaining and transmitting classified information related to national defense. He's accused of posting military documents online. 15 people killed, 10 others hurt in Manitoba, Canada, where Royal Canadian Mounted Police Superintendent Rob Lawson says a bus crashed into a semi-truck.
The bus had already crossed the westbound lanes of Highway 1 and was crossing the eastbound lanes when it was struck by the semi.
Investigation continues. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey signing a law that cuts the state sales tax on groceries from 4% to 3% on September 1st. This is ABC News. A European Union international conference is aimed at helping people of Syria.
It's the 7th Brussels conference and the first since Syria rejoined the Arab League and since earthquakes rattled the war-torn nation earlier this year. The UN Secretary General says,
"My appeal is simple. Help us help the Syrian people. We are asking for $11.1 billion, our largest appeal worldwide. And we have no time to spare."
Although some refugees have started returning, they represent just a small fraction of the 5.4 million who remain in Lebanon and neighboring countries. Tom Rivers, ABC News at the Foreign Desk.
Head of the United Nations calling for a credible exit strategy from the use of fossil fuels and a shift to clean energy. Major League Baseball laying out a detailed process to approve the Oakland A's move to Las Vegas. Commissioner Rob Manfred says Oakland will file a relocation application. There'll be a committee, then a recommendation to the Executive Council. Andy Field, ABC News.
Here's what you need to know in western Wisconsin. I'm Jimmy Cuska. Despite some recent light rain, the U.S. Drought Monitor shows that nearly half of Wisconsin is experiencing moderate drought. The drought, which covers most of northwestern Wisconsin, as well as nearly the entire southern third of the state, is up to 46%, which is a rise from 25% a week ago. Additionally, over 90% of the state is considered abnormally dry. The National Weather Service is forecasting a significant chance of above-average temps and below-normal precipitation for the state for the next 6 to 10 days. An air quality advisory has been issued for the southern two-thirds of Wisconsin through midnight. Wildfire smoke from Canada is covering most of the state, with current air quality unhealthy for children and people with certain medical conditions. The outdoor public pool in Chippewa Falls is set to open tomorrow. The pool, which was supposed to open last Friday, needed to delay its opening by a week due to a burst pipe that was discovered in the middle of last week. And UW-Eau Claire named Jason Vertigo as its new athletic director. He previously was the AD at Hamline University in St. Paul. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigby Olson has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hello? I'm a Marine.
No matter how you served.
My buddies from the Army are all gone now. I'm really alone.
No matter what you're going through.
I keep getting calls about the bills, and I'm trying to get a job,
I feel so stuck.
We are here for you. If you or a veteran in your life is experiencing thoughts of suicide, dial 988, then press 1 to reach the Veterans Crisis Line.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at SoundItOutTogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Who to hate and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of a working class. Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Going to start off, what a good story coming out of Pennsylvania. You may remember a couple of days ago, the story of a tanker truck crashed under a bridge on I-95 and basically lit it up and collapsed. And all of my friends are in Philadelphia are freaking out because it's already hard enough to get up and down 95 or anywhere in Philadelphia. Now you're going to have this shutdown. You're going to have this massive, you know, harm to our economy, honestly, because a huge portion of our economy goes up and down that road. So to have half of the highway shut down, that's going to be a problem. And as someone who drives a truck for a living, I've been in those things. And I think Bridgeport, Connecticut, it happened there, I guess it was 20-some years ago. But the governor, and this is, you know, doing what the governor has to do. Emergency, get all the response you can there. Do everything that you can possibly do with all the levers and all of the strings you can pull to get the resources you need and the money you need and the things expedited to get it done quickly. Democrats do a good job of that. But what they do a terrible job at, and I've been saying this for years, what they do a terrible job at is promoting the fact that they're doing their job. And if you remember when the bipartisan, a handful of Republicans coming along with all the Democrats, the bipartisan infrastructure bill passed through, I said the first thing that they've got to do is whenever one of these projects pops up, giant 20-foot billboard of Joe Biden going, I did that, to let people know this is your tax dollars at work. This is the administration doing its job. Good messaging, good PR, good all of that stuff. But more importantly, good governance. Citizens knowing this is how my tax dollars are being used. And the reason I bring all those things together is because the Pennsylvania governor, Josh Shapiro, did all those things. Got all the resources moving. There's demolition crews. There's all kinds. There's work being done. But now they put up a live stream. And I love this idea. A 24/7 live stream that you can watch the I-95 being rebuilt. You can see the cranes and the tractors. You can see all the work happening in real time, anytime, day or night. And you will see that they're going to be out there anytime, day or night, to get this thing done and done right. And my mind is like, this is brilliant. Somebody should have thought of this a whole bunch of years ago. And the reason I bring this up, I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit here. Because I've been saying for a very long time, Democrats need to do this kind of stuff. Obama tried with the American Rescue and Recovery Act, the ARRA. There was a board that you drove in. Oh, this brought to you. No, that's that's just a little tiny sign. You needed something big, something bold, something that people can see daily. Because here's the thing. You know that traffic cam, that live stream is going to be picked up by news stations all across this country. Hey, if nothing more, hey, let's find out what they're doing on 95 in Philadelphia. Oh, they're working. They're rebuilding. Your tax dollars at work. Now, I've said over the past more than a decade, that, and I used to say this to my building trades friends, that they should have created an app where anytime you're going to drive near a structurally deficient bridge or a piece of our infrastructure that is failing, and there's a lot of it, that it just shoots you a text. You know, something cute, like call mom. You might not make it to the other side. You know, something a little light and cheery. but, you know, just to raise awareness of what our infrastructure is like. And I came up with that idea back in 2012. But the idea being that maybe with technology, we can engage people. Maybe that gets them to act. Maybe add a link to go, hey, you know, call somebody to get something done. That kind of stuff. So I look at this thing with Shapiro and this is great. Also today, the folks over at the Center for American Progress, they have come out with their tracker of all of the jobs that are being done because of the infrastructure bill. And it's all the geeky stuff. It's the job numbers. It's the project. It's, you know, it's all kinds of stuff that you know, I think is fantastic. Now, I think they need to take all of this stuff, the live stream idea, all of the geeky stuff with the numbers and the job creation and the investments and all of that stuff, and put it together on something like, you know, like one of the Waze apps or Google Maps or one of those things where as you're driving around, it's just popping up at you. Go, oh, hey, look, there's a Joe Biden did that. Look at those jobs that Joe Biden created. Look at that economic activity in our neighborhood. See, this is the kind of stuff that Republicans used to do really well. I mean, messaging-wise, Republicans used to be at the top of the game. They knew how to message, and they knew how to do it really, really, really well. I kind of think they're slipping a little bit because there are crises and there are opportunities out there for them to take advantage of. There really are. I look at East Palestine. You remember East Palestine? Remember that? There was a little train thing that happened. You know, some train cars and some, you know, vinyl chloride and some, you know, bad drinking water and some stuff. Remember that? Remember when that happened? I know it was so long ago. You know, like 4 months ago. An eternity in political life. But what's been done since? It's basically been forgotten. And as I understand, yesterday you had a number of residents from East Palestine who went to the Ohio Capitol saying, hey, Governor, Republican, DeWine, how about you do something to help us out? How about a little something for the effort? How about something, you know, to clean up the water? How about something to, oh, I don't know, do what's right? And I guess they were, you know, summarily dismissed. And, you know, the sad reality is they've still got to go back to homes where the drinking water is not drinkable. They've still got to go back to places where they're dealing with the reality of the mess that was left by the railroad industry. And they've got a Republican government who's doing nothing to help them. And you go, oh, well, that's what's going on. And this is the frustrating part of this, because I keep coming back to the realities. The realities are Republicans hate working people. There can be no other explanation. Because this is a perfect opportunity for them to say, hey, we got resources. We could get money from Biden, put our name on it, fix East Palestine, and say we did it. But they won't even do that. That, my friends, that is just mind-blowing. But here's the reality. These are the same people who we talked about yesterday. The Tax Cuts for Working Families Act. You know, that doesn't really give any tax cuts to working families. You know, if you're a rich guy, you know, you're going to get a boatload of money. But if you're a working stiff, maybe you get $40. That's a messaging bill. The message they're sending you is they don't care about you. And all of this is messaging. Again, Democrats do such a poor job of it. And look, Josh Shapiro, good on you, man. It's about time we get someone who understands how to do the job and then show people, look what we're doing. Transparency, accountability. Incredible stuff to me. Now you go, but Rick, you're just being mean to the Republicans. You know, they've got plans. They've got ideas. They're going to help. They're going to help the middle class. They're going to help you, your working people. Yes, they are. They said they are. Again, I come back to, what did they say and what are they doing? Yeah, they can say all they want. They want to help. Oh, yeah. We care. Look at how much we care. We care so much that the Republican Study Committee, they have released their proposal. Now, remember, again, this is one of those hypocritical moments. Republicans don't want to cut Social Security. No, we would never do that. How dare you say we would do such a thing? We would never. Republican Study Committee yesterday released their plan to gradually raise the retirement age from, what is it, 67 now, up to 69 by 2033. Now, if you remember, back in the old days, 7 to 10 years ago, the age that they wanted to start doing this at is like, 50, 52, 55, somewhere in that range. So you had time. If they're going to screw with your Social Security, you got time to make it up in other ways. You've got time to do other stuff. Well, what they're planning on doing is, well, they're still going to raise it to 69. That's still the goal. But the trigger number is, if you're turning 62 in 2033, so if you're 52 right now, you're screwed. If you're 52 or older, you're screwed right now. Or 52 and younger, you're screwed. If you're 53 right now, you're okay. You made the cut. You're only going to have to wait to 67. And this is, again, one of those things, as I said, this isn't a new policy. This is something that they've been floating for years. But I throw it out here because these are the people who, if you remember, now again, remember... they would never cut Social Security. We would never do that. We never wanted to do any of those things. We're being wrongly accused. Oh, poor woe is us. Except those of us who do have memories and do remember the last 3, 4, 5, 10 years know that this has always been the goal. Now, the threat that they use, well, if we do nothing, it's going to eventually lead to a benefit cut of 23%, because in several years, if we continue to do nothing, there is a very real problem. And we could solve that problem. We could by, a whole bunch of different things. I don't know, scrapping the cap would be a good idea, raising that top number to where maybe our very wealthy, maybe they don't pay Social Security tax only on day one of the year. Maybe we go, hey, we're going to ask you to pay Social Security tax for 2 days. Yeah, maybe the first 2 days, maybe a week. How about a week? Can we get a week out of you? Whereas the average working stiff, you're paying 24/7, 365. They're getting Social Security out of you on every dime you earn, and yet are very well-to-do on just out of portion. I think we could fix that. I think that could be something. If you look at Social Security the way I do, not as a retirement plan, but as anti-poverty insurance to ensure that working people who work their lives, who work hard, play by the rules, actually have something in retirement, I think my idea is a very good one. And it's something we should be moving on. Now, Republicans know if they stall long enough, if they delay long enough, eventually they're going to get their wet dream. Oh, boy. Oh, they're going to get all tingly and all, warm and fuzzy, which is why the numbers haven't changed. So you go, now if you go, hey, well, if you're 55 today by 2023, or we'll raise it to some, No. They want to make sure that they're getting you. And they've targeted that. Because that number, I believe, and I got to look into the research into this, that's going to hit the most number of people. Especially working people. And it's weird because these are the Trump folks that they're really targeting. It's quite remarkable to me, but I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at the Rick Smith Show.com. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I think my favorite story from Trump arraignment day came in from the after party, if you will. Now, this story's made its rounds already, and I'm sure everyone's already seen it, but it is one of the most Trumpian things ever. It really is. We're going to promise everyone, come to this Cuban restaurant, this Cuban bakery. I'm going to feed everybody. So come and let's have our little prayer. They got together for their big prayer, happy birthday thing. And they did all that stuff. Very performative. He got his PR little stunt, got his photo op, got his mug in the paper, got all that on TV. And then bolts. Nobody got a donut. Nobody got a cupcake. Nobody got a cup of coffee. Nothing. But it was one of those things. We're gonna feed everybody. Food for everyone. Not even a cookie. Not a cookie. Again, one of the most Trumpian things ever. And what's interesting to me is, you know, I look at the people who follow him. And it's, I'm struggling, man. Because there are so many of these stories of him stiffing people. There's so many stories of his inability to make good decisions. And I've gotten a lot of positive traction out of saying, look, his parents were crappy parents. They raised a crummy kid. They raised a spoiled, rotten child, and the rest of us are going to have to deal with his tantrums. You know, I love when you hear people, I don't want to sit next to a crying baby on the plane. Well, we've got a crying baby running for president again. And the thing that gets me is, you know, they put him up on this pedestal. Oh, he's the smartest guy. He's all this. I look at this story coming out of the Washington Post. Now, if you remember during the years he was in the White House, the reports came out from inside the White House that he spent most of his time watching the F channel and basically doing whatever the hell they told him to do. So whatever he got in his head from them or from talk radio, because they get ratings, he pursued. That was his idea. It's turning out to look like potentially part of these documents being taken and held on to for so long is the result of him listening to this guy, Tom Fitton, who is the head of this you know, right-wing group, Judicial Watch, who goes and files a bunch of frivolous lawsuits so that they can raise money off of it. I guess this guy had given Trump advice that Trump has followed that, and I don't even know if Fitton's a lawyer, that his lawyers are like, maybe don't. This would be, again, one of those very Trumpian things. And it's remarkable to me that someone has gotten this far in life without, I don't know. I'm having a tough time. But here's the weird thing. all of this stuff, all of this news, all of this information, all of these things that keep, they're just, you're just looking for bad things, Rick. You're just picking on the guy. I didn't not give anybody a cookie. You know, we go to strike lines. When we go to strike line, we bring stuff. I've never walked away from a strike line without bringing something. I've never done these kind of events without going, somebody gets, I promise something, it's going to be done. Never. But here's the thing. A new national research poll finds that in New Hampshire, Trump has increased his lead over DeSantis by another 5 points. It's 44-12. You got Tim Scott's the next closest with Chris Christie at 7%. Nikki Haley, 5%. But the more that comes out about Trump, it seems the more that the faithful love about him. Now, here's the weird thing, and this is where I had this conversation today with someone that he's going to be acquitted. And I'm going, I don't know. Numbers aren't really on his side. Because as Pew pointed out today, out of the nearly 72,000 federal criminal cases last year, out of the nearly 72,000, in fact, 71,944, only 290 were acquittals. That, my friends, that is a heck of a record. 0.4% get acquitted. If I'm rolling the dice, I got to tell you, 99.6% chance I'm getting convicted. I'm looking for a deal. Now, the weird thing is, and this is the weird thing, evidently, there were attempts to make a deal. I got to wonder who he listened to say, no, you don't need a deal. No, you're fine. Don't worry about it. Oh, man. I mean, it just gets weirder and weirder. Again, I forget who said this to me a couple years ago, that you couldn't, if you went to Netflix with this script, they would send you down the road packing. And look, there's some pretty much garbage on Netflix. Or a lot of these streaming services. There's a lot of stuff there. Or YouTube. You couldn't even go to YouTube with this and go, okay, can I put this YouTube video up on your platform? They would even balk at it of how outrageous it is. And now we've got this. You got Chuck Grassley, and this is, you know, you go, Chuck, buddy, what is wrong with you? Saying that they've got evidence. They've got tapes. They've got Biden by the snarklies. Evidently, they've got him. You know, I'm sure there's other things that they've got. Evidently, the claim is that he solicited a bribe. He got bribed. He's on the take, and they've got the receipts. Only, if you remember, James Comer, the Republican from Kentucky, who admitted that, well, we kind of lost our guy. Don't know if he really actually don't know where he is. Which is code for, we never had anyone. I believed someone's BS. And, well, there's nothing. Now, because again, yesterday, everyone was crazy. We've got the whistleblower. It's, you know, we've got the person who did it. We've got the smoking guns. Now, Rudy Giuliani has come out and said, well, sorry, the person passed away. Person died. Now this, you know, this is Giuliani saying he knew this chief accountant at Burisma knew who it was, but died under suspicious circumstances, said a woman unnamed. You can't make this stuff up. Now my mind goes into fun places, because heck, you know, Republicans are good in making up stories. If you lived through the 90s like I did, you know that Bill Clinton was the number one asset for wet work in the world. Killed George Foster, killed a bunch of people, you know, while doing presidential stuff, you know, snuck out through the JFK tunnel, put on the, you know, the black suit, did his criming, and then snuck back in. Nobody ever caught him. No one knew it was him. In fact, it's kind of like he was a ghost. So my mind goes, I'll bet you Bill Clinton got his wet work suit back on, snuck out from Hillary and went and did the deed. I mean, I'm waiting for that to be the... I'm waiting for them to say, you know, Joe Biden, who tripped over the sandbag, he's really... This is... It's really a ploy. Joe Biden went out and did the wet work himself. I'm waiting for that argument to tell you just how goofy these people are. As my grandfather always said, there are some people who will lie when the truth would be better. I think we're seeing them. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day anti-union violence erupted in the Valley of Steel. The Little Steel Strike was then in its 20th day. The strike had spread to Bethlehem's Cambria Works in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Newspaper headlines screamed, 30 clubbed, stabbed, shot in strike. Guerrilla warfare breaks out anew in Pennsylvania. The day had been marred by hours of fighting with scabs and the police as miners joined picketers in support. Strikers lobbed rocks at scab cars attempting to drive through picket lines and successfully overturned a number of vehicles. Steel-helmeted police attacked strikers, swinging riot clubs and launching tear gas shells. One picketer, Tony Mandos, was in critical condition after having been shot twice by police. Mayor Daniel Shields announced he had deputized 250 special police and was preparing to, quote, raise an army of 3,000 American Legionnaires by nightfall to protect the city of Johnstown from strikers. At Warren, Ohio, dynamite crippled railroad operations at a struck Republic steel mill on the Ashtabula-Niles branch of the Pennsylvania Railroad. The explosion came after carloads of raw material had been shunted in and products shipped out of the mill. Auto plants throughout the Midwest slowed production for lack of steel-made parts. UAW President Homer Martin dispatched a telegram to CIO leader John L. Lewis saying, quote, "We are standing by ready to refuse to use steel made in struck plants in the production of automobiles, unless the steel companies make a speedy and amicable settlement with the striking steelworkers." The CIO threatened a 20,000-strong strike support rally through the streets of Johnstown to protest the violence. They claimed victory when the governor quickly declared martial law and padlocked the gates of the Cambria Works.
Why would your local newspaper not even mention an important local news story? Perhaps because it's a damning story about the conglomerate owner of the paper. This month, hundreds of journalists working for major dailies in some two dozen cities across America joined in an extraordinary mass walkout from their jobs. They were protesting the rank greed, gross mismanagement, and abandonment of democratic duty by the owner of their papers. That owner is Gannett, a massive financial conglomerate that has grabbed control of more than 200 dailies in 43 states. This is a huge, multidimensional news story about news itself. But where was the coverage? Big story number one. Unbeknownst to most people in these communities, they no longer have a local daily paper. Control over everything from news content to price now belongs to bean-counting strangers at Gannett headquarters hundreds of miles away. Big story number two. More fundamentally, control has moved from journalists to bankers. Gannett is owned by SoftBank, a Japanese hedge fund that has rapaciously looted American newsrooms to grab extravagant fees, salaries, and profits for its rich financial hucksters. Big story number three. The workaday hometown reporters, photographers, and others who actually produced Gannett's papers are making a gutsy stand against the profiteer, not just for themselves, but for the essential ideals of journalistic integrity and grassroots democracy. Biggest story of all. Gannett's 200 papers cravenly joined in a concerted blanket cover-up of this story, stiffing the public they're supposed to serve and disrespecting the ethical stand of their own employees. Even Gannett's flagship paper, USA Today, which regularly reports on other labor actions, took a dive on covering the journalistic malfeasance of its own overseer. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight hedge fund corporatization of journalism, go to newsguild.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I love this comment by the folks at the National Review. They're saying that pardoning is not enough for Donald Trump. No, pardoning not enough. We must all perform seppuku for Donald Trump. We're going to all have to gut ourselves in public for the dear leader. I just find that hysterical. I don't know why that caught my funny bone. Probably as funny as the quote from, what's her name? The Wasilla woman? Sarah Palin. She was on Newsmax, asked about being a cult member for Trump. And she said, no cult members, no. The definition, she said, of a cult is a group of people who are excessively supporting one another and a cause, all about conformity and compliance and intolerance of anyone who disagrees with what their mission is. And so why is that not why you're in a cult? Maybe here to answer that question and help me work my way through it, I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, help me, please.
Hello and happy Thursday.
So, thoughts? I agree with her. She got something right. I mean, this is like the blind squirrel finding a nut. She actually, pretty good definition. Nailed
it. Broken clock is right. Broken clock's still right twice a day. So, you know, that's pretty much Sarah Palin in a nutshell. Definitely in the nutshell.
This, yeah, exactly. In the nutshell here. I'm going, did I miss something? Evidently, I must have.
Yeah, there. I feel like she would be an expert on what cults are.
Right?
It seems like her little compound that she sort of built, and then she tried to get that TV show for a while, and then like all of that was really this idea of building a cult of personality around herself. And so I think that's how legitimate cults begin, is with that idea of a specific person, and you know, everybody's got to rally around that person. Like, you know, the people in Waco were there for like 50 years before David Koresh showed up, and only then did it become a cult.
Right.
So,
well, good point. I was thinking about this today, you know, as I was reading her quote, and I'm going, you know, I wish we could somehow reanimate John McCain. If there was an AI way to bring John McCain back to ask him, what the hell were you thinking?
Oh, I know, right? Like, that is the one question I feel like we really never got a good answer to before he passed. And I don't know that it was necessarily him. Like, it really does seem like a lot of it came down to the desperation of, you know, yeah, pulling somebody in that was different. And that was all they had to work with.
But, you know, I look at all of this, where we are. I mean, you know, Lindsey Graham. What do you think of Lindsey, John? I'd love to hear
right?
that comment, too. All of that.
Oh, man. Seriously, that would be a good question to ask. And I think, honestly, McCain had to have seen the direction that the Republican Party was going, just based off of what he saw between 2000 and after 2004, because that whole era of politics really shifted to kind of bring the culture wars into the mainstream, yeah, particularly with George Bush's, you know, big campaign for evangelicals to vote against marriage equality in a bunch of states. So that's sort of been a big part of the beginning of this. And it has just grown more and more from there. And, you know, it's the last dying breath of the far right. You know, if they can't fight back now, they're done in a couple of years, because a lot of the people who believe in their ideology are going to be dead. Not because of, like, you know, people killing them, but they're just old. They're
right.
going to die.
No, I know where you're going with that. speaking of old, and you know, I was just talking about Rudy Giuliani, who's back in the news again. I guess Rudy needs something to stay relevant. What's amazing to me is this guy was at one point a somewhat respected federal prosecutor. This guy was a respected lawyer at one point. I mean, you got to go way back for that. The number of things that he's been involved in that are just, let's genuinely say, I don't know, suspect? I don't know, critical? I'm trying to figure out the right word here. Of the lies and the nonsense that he's brought out, but I'm trying to be, you know, at least, you know, somewhat.
You're being entirely too charitable.
That's the word I'm looking for. I'm trying to be charitable. No. Trying to be nice. Yeah.
And I appreciate that. I'm sure Rudy appreciates that. I don't know that the rest of the world does. But yeah, Rudy's had this, you know, he's been after this whole Burisma story, this big conspiracy about around Ukraine. He went to Ukraine. He tried to get all of this information that he dug up. And that has been the source, like the only real conspiracy theory that Republicans have managed to grab onto. And I don't know if it's just that they couldn't find anything else, and so that they just sort of thought, oh, well, here's a conspiracy that we can grab. We'll just use this one. But genuinely, it seems like this is the whole shebang for them. And what we have seen since Republicans took over Congress is they focused so much on that conspiracy. But as all of it goes back to, like, every road leads back to Rudy Giuliani. Like, every piece of information that all of these people are getting, all these Republicans are getting, and they're putting in front of Congress, it all goes back to Rudy Giuliani. And I don't know that Republicans understand that, or it may just be that they know it and they're trying to hide that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said from the beginning when all the Hunter Biden stuff came out, I'm going, you know what? Look, throughout my entire life, I've heard these kind of stories of nepotism and people using their family name to swindle. That is not new. That's gone on. Until you can draw me a direct line from whatever Hunter Biden did, or, you know, Joe Biden's brother, or his second niece's cousins, nephews, uncles, brothers, sisters, twice removed. Until you can draw me a direct line from there to Joe Biden, I don't care what they did. And this is them trying to draw that line, and it's not even a dotted line.
Well, their latest conspiracy is this idea of, you know, the FBI has this document that they won't release to the public that alleges that Joe Biden was laundering money. And the thing is that this document that the FBI has, it's not just a document. It is the form that the FBI agent used when somebody came to the FBI and said, I have a tip that I want to give you, right? So any Yahoo who phones into the FBI, they follow this form, they write all the information on the form, and then that form is filed away.
Right.
That form, the 1023, I'm pretty sure was because it was filled out with Rudy Giuliani's conspiracy theories. And the reason I think that is the case is because Bill Barr kind of suggested it. Rudy Giuliani's hinted at that the same things that are on that are the same things that he's saying now. And I know, and Jamie Raskin has said that after he read the form, that that all of the information that was on it came secondhand.
Right.
So all of those things together basically tell me, okay, this information is probably coming from Rudy Giuliani. So basically, Republicans in Congress are creating this whole conspiracy around Rudy Giuliani giving a tip of his Burisma conspiracies, his Ukraine conspiracies, to the FBI.
Yep.
Bill Barr has already investigated this stuff and decided that Rudy Giuliani was a complete crank and, you know, drunk and whatever. He's made it pretty clear that they've already looked into all of this. But for some reason, Comer and Chuck Grassley keep saying, oh, but, you know, they wouldn't let us look at this form that Rudy Giuliani, you know, that was filled out by the FBI agent. They won't let us see this form. And it's just absurd, because it's all it is the interview with Rudy Giuliani.
But it's all they've got. I mean, and this, again, is one of those things that shows how desperate they are. But again, what's shocking to me is someone like Grassley would put his name to this. Look, you expect a kook, like, you know, some of the kook class, the Marjorie Three names and the forehead guy and the gun fetish nut woman. You expect them to come out with this kind of stuff. You expect that. But Grassley's been around forever. Comer's the head of a committee, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, and I think basically Grassley got looped into this thing, and I think he's starting to realize, oh, crap, I maybe got too far into this before I realized what was going on. The latest idea is that this document alleges that there are tapes of Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, and that the person that that Rudy Giuliani got these tips from was holding on to these tapes because they wanted to make sure that if they needed them for any kind of whatever, you know, insurance policy, that they would have them and be able to use it.
Bribe so, or ransom, yeah.
Right. So Comer started mentioning these tapes. And then Grassley comes in and starts mentioning the form and the tapes. And then what has happened over the weekend is that you find out that Rudy Giuliani says the person who had these tapes has died.
Yep.
And this is like the new weird conspiracy theory. And here's the thing, like Thursday is my Friday, right? So at the end of the day, I'm looking to like kick back and get out of work. And like half an hour before I'm supposed to be off work, I see Midas Touch post this video of Rudy Giuliani on Newsmax saying, "Oh my God, my whistleblower from Burisma who had these tapes has suspiciously died." And I'm like, okay, this is weird. And I chase Rudy Giuliani down the stupid rabbit hole like an idiot. And basically what has happened is Rudy claims that the woman who died was married to a guy, and he's the one who made these tapes. And he suspiciously died too. Rudy didn't mention the name. He didn't mention how she dies. Nobody knows anything about this. Come to find out, the only person that he's saying could have died that worked for Burisma, that was the CEO of Burisma, only guy that could apply to is this one Ukrainian dude. He and his buddy were the ones who founded Burisma. The dude died in 2011. So Hunter Biden didn't get appointed to the Burisma board until 2014. That's 3 years later. Joe Biden didn't even go to Ukraine until what, like 2015? So this whole conspiracy theory is coming from a guy who says that he made tapes to try and persuade Joe and Hunter Biden of something, because that he made them somehow like 3 years before he even met him.
Right.
And that now, you know, the woman who had these tapes is now suspiciously disappeared, and he doesn't know her name and anything else.
And he doesn't know her name, no. But you know, I have a theory of who did the wet work, though.
Do tell.
It was Bill Clinton. Because right? If you remember, you know, Bill is our you know, when you need some wet work, some political wet work done, he's the guy, man. If you listen to right-wing conspiracies from the 90s, he killed a bunch of people, snuck out through the JFK tunnel, got his little dark suit on, and did the deed.
And have you heard about his sock drawer? I mean, that's the new conspiracy, is Bill Clinton is hiding things in his sock drawer, y'all. Oh my God. Like, holy cats.
I'm sure he is. They're probably little blue pills.
So this has been the stupid rabbit hole I chased down. But this is what James Comer is talking about. This is what Chuck Grassley has got himself into. And you're like, wait a minute. This took me 45 minutes to figure this out. And you're telling me that you've been in Congress and dealing with this for months and you don't already know this? Either you are the biggest idiot that has ever been in Congress, which is really saying something, or you are actually lying to the American people.
No, and this is one of those things that, you know, I don't think they care about the truth. This is about the ends justifying the means. This is about, we've got to go after Biden. We've got to get some dirt. There's got to be a reason for impeachment. There's got to be a reason to justify what Trump's done. There's got to be all of this stuff. And that's my problem with this polar red hat, blue hat stuff. Look, what Trump did was wrong. Those were crimes. If we could dig up Ronald Reagan and reanimate him, I know what side of this divide he's going to be on. And it's not going to be the orange side.
Yeah, hell, if we reanimated Ronald Reagan, he'd probably be a Democrat by now.
Yeah, he'd be back to being a Democrat. You're right.
That's what's so crazy, is that they've gone that far, you know, down the off the reservation.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. I got a couple other things I got to jump into real quick before we get out of this. I wanted to get your thoughts on Herschel Walker's going back to college.
Bless his heart.
I got to wonder, is it so that he can, you know, pay for some more abortions of college girls?
I assumed it was because he was trying to get another job, you know, working for the university as like a coach or something. And this way he could get it through work study. And, you know, because otherwise he wasn't going to get hired. this is like the only way he could have a gig. You know, I just, anytime an older person decides to go back to school, I say good on you. Let's just say that.
Okay. No, I'm right there. Look, I, you know, he was valedictorian. He had all these accolades. You know, maybe now he's going to go back and get them, you know, that, and good for him, you know, all in favor of it. Also wanted to get your thoughts on Whoopi Goldberg's thought that she wants a constitutional amendment that says you shouldn't be able to run for the, to run the country from the joint. I'm against the idea of a constitutional amendment banning people from running from office, from prison, because I look at Eugene V. Debs and I find him to be somebody that I historically look up to, and he did it. So I'm against it. Thoughts?
Yeah. Like that was kind of the conversation we were having online today. You and I were, on Twitter is, her big thing is, you know, you can't vote from prison. You shouldn't be able to run for office from prison. And you shouldn't be able to then, you know, run the country from prison. And I'm with you. Like, I think honestly, everybody who is in prison should be able to vote. They're still citizens. They still have a constitutional right to vote. And that's actually been tested, not the vote part of it, but they still have constitutional rights. That's been tested in court with Michael Cohen's thing most recently, where they tried to say he couldn't write a book in prison. They're right. Like, no, he still has First Amendment rights. So the Constitution applies to people when they're in prison. And that to me means like folks should be able to vote from there, and then maybe we could get some prison reform. But two, I think there's nothing wrong with folks being able to run from prison. You look at some of the most amazing abolitionists of our time who have been imprisoned and wrote amazing things from prison and continued to be activists from jail. And
no, look, I think it'd be a really big uphill climb, and I think there should be something that says that you can't then pardon yourself. You know, I think something like that has to be in place, but I think you should be able to vote. I think you should be able to run for office. I don't think you're going to win. I think the chances are pretty slim. You're not going to be out knocking on doors and, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies from jail. But, you know, this, again, seems like one of those overreaction things.
I think so, too. Can you imagine the campaign ads? Like, how would you film a campaign ad from your tiny little cell? You know, like, would your cell block mates be the ones giving you endorsements? Like, how would that work? But I mean, the one piece of it where I think Trump applies here is, I think if you were convicted of espionage, I think that's game over. And the law actually does state that unless you have, if you've been convicted of espionage, you can't serve as president. And I think that's completely reasonable.
Reasonable. So I still say he's not going to go to jail, even if he is convicted. I know I've had a lot of people go, no, I think you're wrong. And I go, I don't know how you imprison a president. I can see house arrest. You know, I can see, hey, you got to stay, you know, in that presidential bathroom where you kept the records, which I think would be an appropriate sentence. But thoughts?
You know, I think back to the Paul Manafort imprisonment. Remember when he was in that jail up in like Northwest Virginia?
The country club?
And he described it like being a VIP. Basically, he had his own huge, monstrous area. He had his own phone. He had a desk and a computer and like basically everything that he needed to be able to run his office and run his operation from prison.
Keep the crimes going. Yep.
Right. And so to me, it's like, well, why couldn't you do that with Donald Trump? Like, I mean, I think we've made it pretty clear just from folks looking through the Secret Service laws, and he will have Secret Service protection while he's in prison. But you know, why can't you just basically stick him in his own little cell block area and be like, all right, have fun?
No, wouldn't that be a crummy detail?
Right? But at the same time, he wouldn't have to do anything.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a crummy detail?
Right? You just have to sit there. And if he's on camera, I mean, he's not going to go anywhere. But if he's in his own cell block area, then nobody could get to him. Maybe Jeffrey Epstein could.
Could you, I mean, stop. But really think about this. You know, I was thinking about this the other day when Trump took office. I came on the air and I said, "This, get ready. This is going to be a really bizarre 4 years. Going to be the most corrupt ever. There's going to be more criming. There's going to be things that we can't even imagine. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a historic. He will be remembered." And I think back to, you know, where my mind was capable of going. And how far, how bad. And I kept coming back to, no one could have imagined this. I knew it was going to be bad, but I didn't think it was going to be this.
Yeah, I agree. I think in my wildest imagination, he kind of blew it out of the water the first couple of months, though, just with that hell with the first press conference that Sean Spicer did, where it's like, he had the most people ever. And it was like, oh, wow, this is now it begins. The beginning of the downfall. And yeah, but it's just, you know, everybody keeps comparing it to terrible governments, to the third world, to dictatorships. The thing is that there are a heck of a lot of people, a heck of a lot of leaders all over the world who have been charged with crimes, who've been convicted of crimes, who've been put in jail. Some from democracies, it's not unheard of. It happens.
Yeah.
And it's just, we managed to go 200 years without it being a president. We've had a heck of a lot of members of Congress who've been put in prison.
Yeah, I got a friend. I got a friend who spent some time in prison, Bob Ney.
You've got senators who were dueling, you know, outside the Capitol off the, you know, floor. So come on. That's just basically a step off from that. It's a more modernized version of that.
No, but what's interesting is I read something a little bit ago that said that, you know, Republicans don't understand what he's being charged with. They don't understand the significance. They've been all hung up in this talk radio version of, you know, this is just an attack on Trump. It's poor, poor, pitiful him. He's a victim. You know, Biden did the exact same thing. And the reality is, no, nobody's done this ever in history. Nobody. This is the first time this has been done at this kind of a level. This is historic, and this is illegal.
And I do think that the major part of this is a lot of folks are going to have to start doing some education campaign, because one of the videos we saw this week of Trump supporters outside of the Miami courthouse, yeah, is, you know, people were asking, well, have you read the indictment? And they're like, no. Yeah. Why would I read the indictment?
Yeah.
So there has to be an education campaign where, you know, and maybe it's all of the special interest groups from the Lincoln Project to Midas, and
waste
to talk
time.
About
waste of time.
What's actually in it.
Waste of time, because they're never going to listen. The fives are
but
never
I think we're not
listen.
Trying to, but we're not trying to convince them. We're trying to make sure everybody else, you know, in the country understands what's going on.
Well, I think polling wise, and I think what 69% of people go, yeah, he did something wrong. I mean, that's a pretty good majority. The red hats, they're never, no matter how much education you throw out, no matter how many facts. Well, there was the one video of the woman going, well, that's not his bathroom. That looks like Joe Biden's bathroom. Where'd you get that from?
Who out of the two of them is going to have both a chandelier on the ceiling and one on the wall?
Well, he's got, like, the chandelier because he got the $5 million from Burisma.
Within, what was that, like 3 feet? You got two chandeliers. Who does that? Who does that? Come on.
Well, you got to have a chandelier in every picture. Every selfie you're taking on the can, man.
Oh, Lord.
That's the presidential library, by the way.
I love that picture where, that same picture, I didn't notice it at first, but when you look over the shower curtain, you see the boxes were stacked in the bathtub. I totally missed that the first time. It was like, oh my God. So it's, you know, can't shower in there. Bummer.
The one thing that surprised me is that the toilet wasn't gold. I thought it was going to be gold. Thought it was golden.
Well, it's because it's in Florida. That doesn't really go with the the scheme.
The scheme.
The public uses that toilet too, I think, because it's, you know, right off the course and it's pretty accessible to people.
I thought that was the most secure location. There were Secret Service people out there. The door locked. If you listen to Kevin McCarthy, you know, Biden had, you know, stuff in the garage. At least, you know, in the bathroom, you can lock the door.
The bathroom lock.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.